Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll get a perspective now on the Israeli-Palestinian situation from a writer very well known in Israel. His name is Nir Baram. He's a 40-year-old journalist and novelist, is an Israeli Jew, but also a Palestinian rights activist, and both his father and grandfather were Israeli labor ministers. Nir Baram's latest book, written in Hebrew, now translated into English, is A Land Without Borders, My Journey Around East Jerusalem and the West Bank. He joins us from Tel Aviv. Hello from New York, Nir. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great to be with you.
For this book, I see you traveled the length of the Green Line. Can you explain what the Green Line is and the purpose of your trip?
Well, the Green Line was based in Rhodes during the 40s, and this was the way that the Western countries decided how to separate the country between Israel and Palestine and the Palestinians back then. So it's not something that came from the grassroots people inside Israel, but it was like a Western dictation during the 40s. But right now, it is the only parameter to solve the conflict. All the negotiations, the ideals of the international community always talk about the 67 borders, which means the Green Line, and two states from both sides of the Green Line.
It looks like you were trying to confront some of the biases or assumptions that were instilled in you growing up. What about your own childhood are you seeking to look at in a new light?
Look, since I was a child, I was raised to understand and to believe that the only solution for the conflict is two-state solution with the parameter of the Green Line. So as a writer, as a novelist, someone who writes article, go to demonstration, I always talked about it. But somewhere around 2011, I started to ask myself if this solution is still viable, if it has any merits on the land when you go there. And then I discovered that most of the people that talk about the conflict in Tel Aviv, in New York, in Geneva, all over the world, has no idea how the West Bank and East Jerusalem, the occupied territories, really look like, what people believe in, how is the blockades located, etc., etc. And I started to understand that until I will go there and see for myself and talk to people, I will just talk about like a zombie solution without understanding what's going on. So it was like something that came, it was doubts that I started to feel, and I wanted to really listen to people and to understand how can we really think about the future, the past, and the current situation.
And I want to come back in a few minutes to whether you think a two-state solution is still viable, and for you as a progressive, what the alternative to a two-state solution might be. We know that Netanyahu's vision of a one-state solution would be probably very different from yours. But for the book, you went to Israeli settlements, you went to Palestinian refugee camps, border crossings, and more. How surprised were you by some of the conditions that you saw Palestinians living in?
I was very surprised by almost everything. First of all, it was like a journey, kind of an adventure. So on the first day of the journey, the first thing I saw in the West Bank was two Palestinians without shirts standing in front of soldiers. And the soldiers say to me, well, those Palestinians were trying to stab us. And then after a few hours, those two Palestinians were released, which is illogical. And then I discovered a totally different story that Palestinians, youth, go to soldiers and say to them, we want to be arrested now, because they feel that if they will be arrested, they can redeem the name of their family or can get money from the Palestinian Authority. So the first thing I learned is what you see at first glance in the West Bank is usually not right. So you know, I went to refugee camps. I talked to bourgeois people, to poor people, to middle class people, to settlers, radical settlers, secular settlers. And I discovered that there is a range of ideas in the West Bank that are totally different from what we hear here in Israel or outside of Israel. Secondly, that the biggest thing for the Palestinian, the most important thing for them is freedom of movement. This is a thing I heard all the time. The inability of a Palestinian to plan his day, to plan is weak because of the blockades, because of the way Israel controlled the way to get in and the way to get out of the West Bank. So it was the understanding that we talk about the two-state solution and we talk about, you know, the settlements and these settlements will stay. But people there don't care about all the grand solutions. They care about specific solution to the everyday worries. And that was very striking. I heard the idea of Palestinian state from 20 Palestinians, and I heard the term freedom of movement from 250, which was very interesting.
So is your goal these days as an activist more about Palestinian political rights than a two-state final status agreement?
Look, we are talking about two states for the last 30, 40 years, and one of the ideals of my journey is to first see if it's still valid, and secondly, to search for new ideas and new solutions. What's very interesting that in the West Bank, Palestinians and Jews that don't agree about anything agree about one thing, most of them, that the green line is not existing in the everyday life. It's not important because Palestinians also feel part of Israel because they were deported, most of them, in 48 from Israel right now. And the settlers want to erase the green line because they want the whole land. So there is one problem that we need to talk about that many people in both sides believe that the land belongs only to them. And this is I didn't understand how this problem is big until I was there. And secondly, I don't see that the two-state solution is still viable. First of all, because the settlers are almost everywhere now, and I don't see how it can be removed. Nobody in Israel will remove hundreds of thousands of settlers. And secondly, we are always talking about 67, the Six-Day War. But the biggest Palestinian trauma is 48, what they call the Nakba, the deportation of 700,000 Palestinians from their villages in Israel. And Palestinians still want justice for 48. So there is also a gap of time between what the Palestinians talk about and between what the Israeli progressive talk about. I think that many people in the Israel progressive parties and movements don't listen to the Palestinians at all.
What kind of one-state solution do you envision?
Well, no, I don't support necessarily the one-state solution. I think that what Netanyahu wants is not a one-state solution. He wants to freeze the situation as it is right now because he doesn't want to give 2 million Palestinians rights in Israel. I suggest in the book some new ideas that coming from grassroots movement, like, for example, two states, one homeland, that envision a kind of confederacy between two sovereign states but will share the land. And I think this is a more interesting idea because nobody will leave his home, his place right now. So the book also try to think about, okay, we came to a dead end with a two-state solution. We can talk about it for another 20 years, or we can start to think and imagine new ideas. And I think that this is the major problem that I face right now, that many people just want to talk about the two-state solution because it's comfortable, because they don't have any other vision. But I really saw that this solution is dead on the ground.
So is something like what you just said viable? Two states, but share the land. So people living in the same geographical location could actually be governed by two different governments. Is that what you're saying?
Look, for example, if you take the European the European model, so they have like the sovereign state, but there is freedom of movement between the states, and each Spanish citizen have rights in Germany. The major problem is that right now the separation is almost impossible. The two population are immersed in each other inside the West Bank and outside the West Bank. And people outside of Israel don't know it. If you go in the West Bank, you will see settlers everywhere. So either you will try to separate, which I think it's almost impossible right now, or you will try to think about a solution which is more flexible and interesting. For example, for many Palestinians in Ramallah and for all the Palestinians in the refugee camps in Jordan and Chile, what is the solution we offer to them? There will be no peace between Israel and Palestinians unless we will convince the refugees all over the world that this solution is viable. We are not just talking with the Palestinians in the West Bank. We are talking to Palestinians all over the world. So for them, our solution of one homeland, two states, which I believe in right now, give the ability to come back to the Palestinian state but still move and have rights inside Israel. So basically, you know, you don't have to agree with this idea or that idea, but what the books give you is a perspective of how things look right now. And if you care about the conflict, if you want to be informed, if you know want to know what you're talking about, I think it's an essential reading just for that. I don't have, by the way, a gold solution. I have to admit right now that I'm also a bit confused. This solution seems logical, but it has a lot of problems, of course. So right now, it is more difficult for me to talk after the journey about solution than it was before the journey, because back then I talked about two-state solution.
My guest is the very well-known in Israel Israeli writer Nir Baram. His latest book is called A Land Without Borders, My Journey Around East Jerusalem and the West Bank. You just heard him talking about a one homeland, two states solution that he's interested in these days. And listeners, will give first priority on the phones right now to any Israelis or Palestinians who happen to be listening. Everyone else, American Jews, hang on. Other Arab Americans, hang on. Any Jews or Palestinians who are from there or with ongoing current connections to Israeli and Palestinian life, first priority on the phones for Nir Baram. Any questions or reactions to what he's saying? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. When you talk about more freedom of movement for the Palestinians, my understanding is that's a big fear of Israelis for security purposes. That's why they built the current barrier and tout it as successful, because they're afraid that whatever that small percentage of it that it is of Palestinians who want to come in to other parts of Israel and stage terrorist attacks are freer to do so. What about that concern?
This is a concern which I totally respect and understand. But you know that, for example, in Jerusalem, Israel built a separation wall or the barrier and threw out some Palestinian neighborhoods to the Palestinian side of the separation wall. And this intifada, the new wave of terror, began from them, from people that was outside the barrier. So the barrier cannot really promise total quiet in Israel right now. But I think that this is a concern, and I think that any solution will take time. We need to build the trust between us again, because what I saw in my journey is total mistrust between the both sides. You know, Palestinians don't believe a word that you hear in the Israeli media, not a word, and the Israelis don't believe anything that Palestinian media are talking about. Even in the book, I tell about the three young Jews that were being kidnapped, you know, two or three years ago, and most of the Palestinians that I met didn't believe that they were kidnapped. They thought that it's an Israeli maneuver. So there is total mistrust right now, which is part of the problem. So I think that the barrier cannot promise Israel quiet for a long time. And I think that Israelis are oblivious to the fact that until the Palestinian will have rights and will can sustain a decent and respectable life, there will be no quiet in Israel.
Yerachmiel in Midtown, you're on WNYC with Nir Baram. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My family is from Jerusalem, originally from Iraq. I'm wondering what type of solution the guest has regarding Jewish refugees from Arab countries. As you know, 700,000 Jews were initially deported or thrown out of Arab countries when the state was declared independent. What's his solution for the Jewish refugees, the compensation for the Jewish refugees from the Arab countries? Thank you.
Well, by the way, it's a very good question for me, because my grandfather is from Yemen and the other one is from Egypt. So my grandmother from Egypt. So if there is compensation, I will get something also. But to be serious, this is two different questions. You know, you can the Palestinians are not responsible for what happened to the Jews in Iraq or in Egypt. Not all the Arabs are part of the same problem, right? So, no, you know, you can say, as a decent argument, that the Palestinians should overcome the Nakba and forget about the Nakba and forget about the villages and start to create a new life and new communities, which, by the way, it's impossible for them because they're under occupation. But this will not help the solution. Israel do not talk about the Nakba. And part of the solution is to talk about the Nakba and about 48. And by the way, if refugees from Arab countries, Jews from Arab countries, want to sue Iraq or Egypt for their houses, etc., I totally agree. But I don't think it's part of the same solution. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's even part of the same problem.
We'll continue with Nir Bahram in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. WNYC. We're getting a perspective on the Israeli-Palestinian situation from a writer very well known in Israel. His name is Nir Bahram. He's a 40-year-old journalist and novelist. He's an Israeli Jew, but also a Palestinian rights activist. Both his father and grandfather were Israeli labor ministers. Nir Bahram's latest book is a nonfiction book written in Hebrew, now translated into English, called The Land Without Borders, My Journey Around East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And he's proposing progressive alternatives to the two-state solution, which might be dead, things like what he calls the one homeland two-state solution. And let's take another call. May in Livingston, you're on WNYC. Hello, May.
Good morning. I apologize. I'm a little bit sick, so...
It's okay. That's one of our main demographics at this time of day, people who are homesick.
That's true.
Go ahead.
And so I actually have a couple of questions. My first question is, how do you think the Israeli society would think or take in this very progressive idea of one homeland, two state? Would they accept it? And my second question is, it's actually really refreshing to hear your opinion that you really need to go to the West Bank and to Gaza and to see the situation, really to be able to understand what it's like, because it's very hard to explain that to others. Living in the U.S., I have a question for you. How do you think, what are the best ways to bring that point home to others outside of the West Bank and Gaza, you know, more into the Israeli homes as well as America's in Europe?
And before we even get an answer to the question from Nir, it sounds like you have a personal connection to the West Bank and Gaza and or, do you?
Yes, I do. I'm a Palestinian originally from Yaffa, and I've lived in the West Bank for more than 11 years, grew up there.
What do you think is one important thing to know about life there that people on the outside have no idea about?
Is that we're humans, you know? We're people who have dreams and aspirations and really want to live normal lives with human rights. And it's not a lot to ask for, that even the violence, it's coming from a human place of wanting normalcy and just wanting our rights.
Nir, go ahead and talk to May.
Hi, May. First of all, for the first question, you know, we didn't talk about it a lot here, but the book also described the settler movement and the settlers' ideas. Why it's important? Because the settlers are now part of the regime. They are part of the government. They are not just agents of the regime. They are part of the regime. So they also feel that they need to advance new solutions and to propose new ideas. You ask the settlers, so what is your solution? What do you want to do with the Palestinians? You want the whole land, but what do you propose to the Palestinians? And I think the book also shows what the right wing in Israel really wants, not what you hear from Netanyahu and all the ministers that interview in English, but what the really grassroots right-wing settlers that led Israel to occupy the territories and led Israel to the settlers' reality, what they actually want. So this is also important. But for my idea, look, I think that the progressive parties Israel is very weak because it has no new ideas, because it's talking about the same ideas for the last 30 years. And people in Israel understand, they are very smart. It's not working. Mm. It doesn't work. It doesn't have any merits on the ground. So we need also to think where we failed and what can we propose right now.
So when May's question was, what could get people in Israel, do you think people in Israel could take something like one homeland, two states, seriously, are you suggesting that because everybody knows how stuck and decreasingly viable the old two-state solution is, that even settler communities are open to new ideas like this?
First of all, we need to build a new coalition. I think some settlers, let's say more democratic settlers, will want this idea because they can stay in their land, some of them. But look, the major problem in Israel right now, that there is an indifference of the Israelis to the occupation, the conflict, because it doesn't affect them every day, because there is not a crazy wave of violence. So the Israeli society is not observed with the occupation, not like the Palestinians who live it every day. So I must admit, I feel certain failure of the progressive to convince the Israelis that to stop the occupation, it's good for us. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about it as an Israeli, as someone who was born and raised in Israel, someone who loves Israel, who cares about Israel. This is my place, my language. And I think it's important for us because truly the occupation corrupts the Israel society. And this is the most important thing for the Israelis to know.
You made a distinction earlier between radical settlers and secular settlers. Why is that important?
It's very important because, look, most of the people outside of Israel, when they think about settlers, they imagine a religious, a fanatic person. But I think 70% of the settlers are not necessarily religious. Some of them are not very right-wing. They came to the settlements in order to improve their life. So this is the important part. The settler movement create a coalition inside the settlers that all the Israeli society is there right now. Russians, young people, old people, poor people, Mizrahim, Ashkenazim, you know. So this is why the Israel outside the settlers movement also support the settlers, because they created a opportunity for many Israelis from lower classes. So these people say to you, look, we don't want to go back to our previous economical situation. We improved our life because of the settlers movement. So if you want to understand the settlers, you need to understand that this is a huge effort by them to pull all the Israeli society to the settlers movement.
Siham in Edison, you're on WNYC. Hello, Siham.
Hi, good morning, Brian. It's nice to be on your show. Thank you, even though I am very nervous being on the air.
It's okay. But, no pressure.
And I appreciate your guest. And, you know, I think I'm torn between his solution, which sounds really a great solution as well. And, you know, but my ideal, I think that the ideal solution in my mind, and of course it's nowadays unrealistic, is to have one secular, you know, democratic state for Israelis and Palestinians. And I also, I cannot help but express that it's very heartwarming to hear, Israeli or Jewish voices who are understanding of the, you know, problem of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and empathize with the unfair conditions that Palestinians are, you know, live under an occupation. And groups like, you know, Jewish Voice for Peace, or every time I hear any progressive voices, I appreciate them.
Siham, thank you very much. She mentioned the sort of U.S. solution, you know, not U.S. solution, like the U.S. model of just a secular Western democracy. The fear about that, as I'm sure I don't have to tell you, is that there's so much anti-Semitism or hostility for whatever reason that if it's just a Western democracy and not a Jewish state per se, or in your solution, a Jewish state and a Palestinian state laid over each other, that the Jews would be persecuted or even slaughtered. It would be what the Jews suffered as a minority in Europe for 2,000 years, which is why they wanted their own state in the first place. So that secular Western democracy model is a non-starter, right?
We are not in the West. We need to remember it. Israel like to envision itself as part of the West, but it's not. It's part of the Middle East. But I think, look, the hostility between both sides is so grave right now that I cannot really imagine a one-state solution. I think it will be a demographic competition between the two sides, and each side will try to gain power in order to repress the other side. But let me tell you this. If we will not do anything, And if we will freeze the situation as it is right now in the last 40 years, we are going to a one-state solution. Because if there is no two-state solution, so there is only one state, and then the question will be the rights of the Palestinians. So I think that realistically, right now, we are going to a one-state solution in 40, 60, 80 years. In one point in history, you will have to accept the fact that the Palestinian has to be citizen somewhere. So what I think we are trying to do, or people that care about the conflict trying to do, is to create a solution right now that will give the both sides the ability to create their identity and their nationality identity. And I think it's very important in this phase. But part of the problem is that we are stuck in the 80s and 90s model, that if you go to the West Bank like I did, with really a good will to see, without any conclusions or any previous opinions, I just saw it's very hard to imagine it's implemented right now.
Nir Baram's latest book is A Land Without Borders, My Journey Around East Jerusalem and the West Bank. Can you give me just a 15-second soundbite on whether you think the succession of Donald Trump after Obama matters to any of this?
It doesn't.
That was
not at all. If you think about it, Obama, Bush, Trump, they are not relevant to the conflict.
Right.
The international community is not relevant to the conflict. It's between us and the Palestinians to solve it.
Nir Baram, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time.